UNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here for Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. Our guests today, Jim Duncan, Matt Hodges, as we talk about real estate in our area market. Special thanks to those on Lexington's 95.3. If you're listening on one of the other channels, 101.1 in Crozet in the Valley, or maybe on 103.1 in Richmond, 91.9 is currently having some technical issues. We're off the air. We expect 91.9 to be back on within the hour. So thanks very much. Feel free to tell your listeners or turn over to the internet, WNRN.org. All right, Jim Duncan from Nest Realty, Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group. We're going to be talking about real estate, financing, how that affects the local economy here in the Charlottesville, Central Virginia area. And, of course, some of the questions will apply to our national issue. Let's jump right into it. When I exchanged some emails from you guys, I did a little bit of homework, believe it or not. One of the things that caught my interest most had to do with inventory. So let's talk about the inventory of our area market. Jim, start with you, Jim Duncan from Nest Realty. One of the things that caught my attention was you kept referring to, when I went to your website, by the way, what is that so other people can check it out?
RealCentralVA.com.
Thank you. You had several comments about quality inventory. What is the difference between quality inventory and, I guess, non-quality inventory, and how that is really affecting things in what I would assume to be a buyer's market?
Well, I think that we're getting to a more stable part of the real estate market, hopefully. Inventory seems to be trending towards healthier levels, defined as, about 6 months of inventory, which takes, that's the amount of time it takes to burn through or to work through the inventory that's on the market. Just some quick numbers. We're down, in Albemarle County for single-family homes, year over year, about 20% down, which is really good. Charlottesville City, same number, about 20% down year over year. So what I mean by that, when I make the distinguishing mark between quality inventory and inventory, quality inventory is homes that people want to buy. I mean, you look at the market, and there are quite a few homes on the market that have been on for, more than 9, 12, 18, 36 months. I would say that those are on for, more than a year and a half or 2 years, probably are either way overpriced or not really a great home, which is going to speak to the bulk of the market. So a quality home is one, or a quality inventory is something that, in my opinion as a professional, is something that's going to probably be very desirable to the bulk of the market that's out there. I think that the good news is that we shouldn't be trending towards a more stable market with more quality inventory coming on the market, and there are a lot of reasons for that that we can get into. But generally, I think that we are starting to see some better homes.
Matt, the mortgage companies, the banks, who determines the title of quality versus non-quality? And do the banks and mortgage companies have any effect on who and how the lending goes from that?
Wow, Rick, that's a loaded question. Good morning. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm well, thank you. Hey,
before I answer the question, I just want to embarrass Jim for a second. Inman News, which is a nationally recognized real estate news distribution site, they've recognized Jim Duncan as an Inman 100. Just a part of what they put out on their website is an annual list of the most influential real estate leaders, recognizes those who embody leadership and ingenuity, strength, conviction, power, persistence, perseverance, and progress. Their voices and actions can move the industry towards change.
That does not include fashion, I'm assuming.
It's a good thing we're not videocasting this.
Congratulations, Jim Duncan. Congratulations.
Thanks. Thank you much.
To address your question, lenders don't specifically talk about quality inventory. What we do is we look at those properties from four criteria: credit, income, asset, and most importantly for this question is collateral. So what does this property look like compared to other properties like it that have sold in the last 6 to 9 months? What is the condition of the property? Is it priced appropriately? How does it match up? And is the appraisal supportive of this property? We've seen quite a few during this past fall where we thought it would be what we call an as-is appraisal. That is, it came back and everything was fine with the property, only to determine that there were repairs needed prior to Fannie, Freddie, or Ginnie Mae being able to purchase the loan.
And my answer to that would be who determines quality? The market. I mean, frankly, the buyers who are out there who look at the inventory and say, that's something that I determine to be quality.
All right. So a little follow-up to the inventory question is – and again, I don't remember where I saw this. I did spend a lot of time on Jim Duncan's blog. Is that the proper term for that? Is it a blog?
I think so. It's an evolving term.
And shadow inventory. What is shadow inventory?
Big question.
Shadow inventory is really hard to define because it consists of a number of different things. Shadow inventory, I guess in its technical term, is a foreclosed upon property. It could be bank-owned. It could be one of the agency-owned. So Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie Mae, any of those could hold it. And the reason it's called shadow is because nobody knows how big that group of properties are or when they're going to be put onto the MLS system for resale. One that we know and we can see on a daily basis is the HomePath property. So Fannie Mae has this inventory of loans, and not all of them qualify for HomePath, but a good portion of them do. When something goes off of HomePath, that is, it goes under contract, another one replaces it. We see what the current inventory is in those HomePath, but we don't see what the bigger inventory that's sitting in the shadows of their overall.
I mean, I add to that a little bit in that I perceive the shadow inventory to be something that's not just the bank-owned properties and things like that, but and this is not really definable, but shadow inventory for me is also the homes that the sellers would love to be able to sell. They bought in 05, 06, 07, and what have you, and they're underwater, but they would love to sell. And if someone were to bring them an offer tomorrow that they were able to take, then they would sell that day. So, I mean, I think that there's a lot of conversation out there about the number of shadow inventory, and it's really a big unknown. But I think that there's no real way to quantify it on a local level without getting in deep into the bank's books as to how much inventory they own on theirs and what their timeline is, if they have a plan, when to release it to the market.
Our guests today, Jim Duncan and Matt Hodges, talking about the real estate market and the local economy here in Central Virginia through the eyes of the real estate market. By the way, 919 problems are fixed. At least externally. Turn on your dial to 919 if that's what you usually listen to, or call your friends and let them know that WNRN back air in the Charlottesville area. Again, our guys, Jim Duncan, Matt Hodges here talking about the local real estate market. Jim, I found something interesting that you said. Let me start that point by home pricing. So home pricing, for many people, at least from what I hear and read, seem to believe that the home pricing is ready or is increasing. True, false?
Home prices across the board seem to be increasing. We're seeing that the median home price in Charlottesville for single-family homes year over year is up about 3%. I'm just pulling my notes. Albemarle County, I'll just say the MSA for the entire Charlottesville Albemarle
MSA, again, we're not all smart real estate people.
We just make this stuff up. The Metropolitan Statistical Area. It's Charlottesville, Albemarle, Greene, Flavanna, Nelson, Flavanna?
Yes, and Flavanna.
But the WNRN listening area.
Right.
Louise is actually outside. It has different loan limits.
Right. Louise is outside it, but in our, from a market perspective,
sure,
it's kind of considered. But the median price for the entire area year over year is up 3%, which is a good number, and it's a nice thing to say, and it sounds really great. But as I always preface in, you know, these shows and any conversation I have, your market is going to vary. So if you have a single-family home in Albemarle, that's going to have a different price point and appreciation or depreciation than a single-family home in Greene or Fluvanna. So it's generally, it's a very positive trend, one we haven't seen in 4, 5, or 6 years. And I think that hopefully it's going to continue this year. But go ahead.
Or even within a certain county, for example, in Greene County where I live, my assessment went up by about 8%. My mother's assessment, who's 10 minutes away, went down by about 15%.
Is that the neighborhood?
It may be. It may be the price point.
Is that because you didn't clean her gutters in the last season?
No, mine went up. Hers went down.
Because you didn't go over to your mother's house and
exactly
clean the gutters for her.
I'm a bad son.
Well, let me jump in on that, if you don't mind. You know, when you speak about the assessments, I mean, the county assessments or the locality assessments are the numbers by which the county uses to tax that home. We talk about three different valuation methods, and there's the assessment that the locality uses, which is a number, the appraisal, which the bank uses after there's a contract to purchase, and then there's, you know, market value, which is what the buyer and seller agree is the market value. And so I think one of the most frequent conversations that we have are what is the correlation between real estate assessments by the locality and market value? And I don't think that there's any strong correlation between saying the real estate assessment is the true market value. It really does depend on where you are, which locality, how often they reassess. And just pulling some stuff this morning in preparation, I looked at the last five homes that sold in Albemarle County through the MLS and found that there is zero correlation between the real estate assessment from 2012 and the market value. I mean, one just sold for $860,000 and it was assessed for $1.1 million. Another one sold for $71,000 and was assessed for $90,000. So the answer, when I get the question of if the assessment is X, what is market value? The answer is it depends.
Well, what I read on, I can never get it right, RealCentralVA.com.
Correct.
Jim Duncan, Nest Realty, that's his blog about not just real estate and what something sold for, but also about a grander issue about how things sell and questions about important topics for those looking to buy or sell in the area. One of your quotes was discussing whether or not some are predicting national home prices to rise by nearly 10% this year. Quote, I hope it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about why you feel this way. And then I want Matt to talk about whether or not it's a different it should be a different perspective, whether or not it's a differing perspective. So go ahead. Why do you not want that to happen?
In my world, I want a steady and sustainable return to normal appreciation. Normal appreciation being, you know, 1% to 3% appreciation per year on average. And I think that if we were to have a jump from depreciation to significant appreciation, it could destabilize the market to a certain degree and also drive affordability to a point where a lot of people won't be able to afford it. I think that, you know, one of the ways we got into the craziness of the last decade was because of such rapid appreciation and speculation. And really, I think that in my market and worldview, I'm seeing that people are approaching homes as, you know, homes. And I think that, you know, if we were to have that, you know, 10, 12, 15% appreciation per year, it would detract from that and see them being more speculative. But the other part of it is I don't know that the market fundamentals are there. I mean, I'm not sure that we're seeing, you know, job growth and salary increases to the point where that would sustain that level of appreciation. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's personal and professional that I really don't want to see 10% appreciation per year.
Yeah, I generally agree with Jim's comments. From the mortgage side, the probably greatest issue is that appreciation causes comparable sale problems. That is, if you're going to compare this property that has now gone up 10% in value to a property that closed in the last 6 months at a price 10% less, you're not going to be able to appraise the house for that correct value. You can use time adjustments, but only very limited, and something in the 1 to 3 range is easier to use than 10%. So then you're coming up with a challenge on how you finance it, because what we're dealing with from an underwriting standpoint is the lesser of sales price or appraised value. If it comes in lower, that means the borrower has to put a larger down payment.
Our guest today, that's Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group. We also have Jim Duncan from Nest Realty here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. And don't forget, at noon, Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Purdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Drew brings you the roots of alternative music, because you can't understand where we are without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip back to the times gone by with Les Temps Purdue, only here on WNRN.
And support for WNRN Today coming from T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. T&N Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com.
WNRN is supported by Ragged Mountain Running Shop, number 3 Elliewood Avenue on the UVA corner. Ragged Mountain specializes in hard-to-fit feet, injury resolution, and training advice, and features nearly a dozen brands of running shoes. Charlottesville's community running headquarters since 1982, the Ragged Mountain Running Shop.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for listening to us here on WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Our guests, Matt Hodges and Jim Duncan, as we talk about the real estate market and the economy here in Central Virginia as seen through the eyes of the real estate market. Gentlemen, you're both involved in the real estate market. How do two gentlemen whose incomes are dependent on home sales, how do you talk about this in a manner that, how do you say, wait, don't buy that now?
Oh, I'll take this one. I say wait because it's not in my best interest to have somebody buy a home that really should not be buying a home. And I think that it's something that I don't make my business necessary. I mean, I earn my income and I pay my mortgage because I get paid on commission when a property closes. But for me, the value of what I do is less selling a home and more representing my client's best interests. I'll give you a perfect example. I was in at Nest last Sunday or Saturday, and some folks walked in and they came in thinking, you know, they said, we think we want to buy a home in Charlottesville. And I said, and we talked for quite some time, and I said, you know, how long do you plan to be here? And they were coming here to UVA. I think one of them was going to be doing a fellowship or something. And their timeline was 3 years. And my advice has been fairly consistent that if you're not fairly confident and secure that you're going to be living here for 4 to 7 years, then I think that you really ought to consider renting. And you know, and we talked for quite some time, and I'm putting them in touch with the folks who can help them find rentals. But the reason I told them to wait was because, you know, I don't feel right saying, well, sure, let's buy a house because I make money. If people want to buy a home, I will help them do that. But my role is to advise and guide to the best of my ability, and not to say always, you know, you should buy a house. I mean, I make my living by, you know, hopefully by being perceived as being honest and having integrity in all that I do, because I care about my clients. And I think that's really the gist of what I do, is to take care of my clients as best as I possibly can and represent their interests, not to sell them something.
And let me answer that just a little bit differently after I give a shout out to my Uncle Al, who's listening online in Colorado. I typically deal with the borrower after they've already gone under contract, but I spoke with one earlier in the week, and he's in the financial services world. He has a private relationship with a banker, And they've offered him a pretty good transaction. And instead of fighting for something I knew wasn't as good as what he had, I said, you really need to take that. That's a fantastic deal. And he said, well, you know, what's in it for you? And I said, well, goodwill that hopefully you and I have built up by working together and me giving you good advice. You're in the financial services world. Perhaps you'll refer business to me in the future. So it's not today's check that we receive as payment. It's doing the right thing within the industry, which ultimately is the right thing for you anyway.
That's good to know. It's good to know that we have two ethical. I wanted to say ethical.
We're angels, really.
It's early Sunday morning for those of us who are out on Saturday night. It's two ethical men from the business, and I appreciate those answers. But Matt, there are certainly people out there who don't have that sort of ethical aura around them. The gentleman from Countrywide.
Yeah, my old boss.
I think the phrase that I read was general villain.
Oh, so he's been called lots of things.
So for those who are buying a home, and certainly the two of you here today on air, hopefully coming across as gentlemen with who are ethical in a good way, how do you raise your hand above the sea of folks such as, is it Angelo Mozzillo?
Yeah, Angelo's was the previous head and founder of Countrywide. I worked there for about 15 months, and I realized I didn't want to be in that organization any longer. He ended up with a over $60 million fine that was levied upon him, of which two-thirds was paid by Bank of America since they had purchased his company. But to give you sort of the cluelessness of someone like him, or perhaps the arrogance, in testimony he was asked, what does this mean? Verified income, 5848 versus 20,833 stated. It's a huge difference, more than three times difference.
But what does it mean to me? As someone who's not in the industry, why should I be concerned about his answer?
Because there were people that were in this industry, and perhaps still are, who only care about the almighty buck. That's why it matters to you who you work with.
But, I mean, I asked that question because I don't understand those numbers. What are the numbers saying?
Well, the numbers are saying in his testimony, if that's what you're asking specifically.
Well, what is give me those numbers again real quick.
Sure.
Or one part of them.
Verified income, 5848. That means that there was something around $65,000 of yearly income.
Okay.
Okay. Versus 20,833 stated, 250,000. There's a big difference
and
between
those
two.
And who stated what?
Countrywide used to take stated loan.
Okay.
Stated income loans. And he claimed he didn't understand the difference between stated and verified.
So he was saying that he was me.
He was, as the president and founder of the most important, perhaps the most powerful lender, didn't understand underwriting rules.
Got it. And now, what is see, because my point being, you know, I ask how you two gentlemen, again, Jim Duncan and Matt Hodges, how you, when your income is based on a sale, how do you not push, always push the sale? And you're giving me good ethics, but there are others out there who don't represent your part of the industry in a good and positive manner. How do you fight through that and stand above it? Jim Duncan now, and I don't remember what the positive award was, but Matt, at the start of the hour, you said Jim Duncan recognized as one of the top 100 and pushing his industry in a positive way.
Let me jump in. I mean, I think that it's a really important conversation. I think we're getting to a point in the real estate business and industry where, you know, the onus of responsibility, it's always been this way. The onus of responsibility has always been, in large part, not just on the professionals who are supposed to be doing the right thing, and supposed to be being a, you know, very loaded phrase, but I think a lot of it has to go to the consumers, the responsibility has to go to the consumers as well. I mean, I think that there's a lot of value to running into somebody who says, I'm a real estate person, and the buyer saying, oh, well, let's work together. But I think that what I've seen in my practice the last 3 or 4 years is I'm more of my clients, while they are coming to me and saying, I've been recommended to you, and I've been told I should work with you, I still treat that first and second interaction as a job interview. I mean, I encourage them to ask me questions. I mean, in fact, I give my prospective clients a list of questions that they should ask to make sure that we're a good fit to work together. And I think that it's there. I mean, in our roles respectively, people are hiring us to represent them and not give them bad advice. So it's important for people to know what our motivations are. And one of the ways that I look at this, and I hope it comes across correctly on radio without my visual inflections, but when I meet with a new client and as part of our rapport develops, I tell them that my motivation for working with them is obviously to help them find the right home and represent them. And when the time is right, if it so comes, always to tell them to walk away. You know, I have to always be in a position both financially and personally to say, this is not the home for you. And I've had clients I have advised to walk away 3, 4, 5, 6 times before they get to a satisfactory transaction. But I have to do that. That's the right thing to do. But the other part of it is, and it sounds trite, but it's really true. I mean, I look at these people as as 3 transactions. 1, when I represent them when they buy the home. 2, when I represent them when they sell their home, because everybody, regardless of their intent to always be there forever, everybody sells their home. And the third is when they recommend me to one of their friends or neighbors. And if I were to go into it from a short-sighted perspective of, I'm going to sell these guys a home that they shouldn't buy and never talk to them again, that does, that does me ill. It does the community ill will, and it's just not a good thing to do. So my advice to buyers and sellers who are looking to hire somebody to represent them is treat that as a job interview.
Jim nailed it. What we're talking about is relationships, not transactions.
Yeah. 11:25 here on the Wake Up Call, WNRN. We're talking about the real estate market. We're talking about the economy. We're also talking about, at least recently, ways to find good people to help you when you go to purchase a home. And we're going to jump into the part about good reasons to purchase a new home or a home in your area and the proper way to do it. You can go to Jim's website, realcentralva.com. We're going to record this as a podcast so people can go, and Jim usually does a great job of putting that up. You can also find it at sevillepodcast.com once we finish. I haven't given out the phone number yet. If you have a question, it's 979-0919. It's also 877-967-6762. That's 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Angie's here to answer the phones and patch you through if you'd like. So how does, we talked about getting a new home, whether you're buying or selling. How does not unemployment, how does underemployment affect the market?
Well, from the mortgage side, underemployment can be problematic. If a borrower is interested in purchasing property, and let's say that they're a trailing spouse to someone who is at the law school or Darden, what have you, and there are reasons that they're buying, that underemployment can be an underwriting issue because you don't have the consistency within an industry, that you don't have 2 years in line of work. It can be problematic for a number of reasons. Probably the greater issue, though, is that people who are underemployed are dissatisfied oftentimes in their positions. They can't find something that is really suited to their talents, their strengths, their education, and they're looking for another position, perhaps in another area.
I mean, I think it's also underemployment, and everything that Matt said is on point. Underemployment, I think that obviously it's financial, but I think it also is a contributing factor for those who are happy here. I mean, you hear the proverbial person who has a higher education degree but can't get a job, that's significant. And I think that part of it leads to something that I think is even greater is the college education bubble that we're facing from a loan standpoint. You know, people who graduate college and have $100,000 or more of student debt and are underemployed to their perceived qualifications. And those people from my point of view and Matt's point of view aren't going to be buying homes for a long time. You know, that's a long-term thing that we need to be aware of, is this college education financing bubble that I think is ultimately going to, you know, burst at some point. So I think that, you know, it's a societal and cultural thing as well as financial, in that people need to be very cognizant of the debt that they incur and how that's going to impact them for 5, 10, 40 years.
Our guest today, Jim Duncan from Nest Realty, with that answer. We also have Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group. We talk about the real estate market in Central Virginia. How about you? That's the second time or so that I've heard you say, Jim, about renting rather than buying. Whether it's an income, whether it's the length of time in our area. And there are a lot of new apartments about to hit the market. There are, I guess, apartment complexes that are being sort of redone. And again, I can think of one in particular that's been in the news out on Barracks Road. Mm-hmm. How does that affect what you do, and Matt, what you do?
I mean, for me, I think it's, you know, on multiple levels. I mean, just I wrote a story last week, and, you know, where I listed some of these new places. You have, you know, the Arden Place on Rye Road, the Pavilion in North Grounds, which is the one on Millmont, you know, near the law school. Stonefield is having apartments, the Reserve at Belvedere, City Walk. Charlottesville Tomorrow just reported, I think this morning, that City Walk has broken ground near the Cole Tower. So, I mean, and those are the ones that I know of off the top of my head. I mean, those are probably 1,000 to 1,500 apartment rentals that will be coming online. So I think that you're going to see that folks who are moving to the area are going to be seeing those as much more of an attractive option than immediately buying a home, which, frankly, I've written the story many times. Renting in a new area before you buy is a brilliant move. But I think it's also going to impact those who are buying homes here as investments, because, you know, if you look at, you know, if you buy something that you think you're going to rent out to somebody, and then that person coming in 4 or 5 years has, you know, 2,000 new luxury apartments from which to choose, that might be an option where they want that apartment living that's new and luxurious rather than, you know, a 1985, you know, townhome. So, I mean, I think it's going to impact our market, you know, greatly and widely on a lot of levels.
What do you do if you, for people who've been renting the same place for a while, is now the time to go to your landlord and say, would you like to sell this to me? Would that have, I mean, is there, does that, I know that it happens, it must happen. Is there a market for that? Is there a timeline of suggested yeses and nos for that?
I mean, from my point of view, I mean, I think that it depends on a lot of factors, and one of them being, you know, what is your relationship with your landlord? But I mean, a lot of these landlords who own these homes, they're looking at these as, you know, buy and hold. I mean, they're looking at, you know, 30, 40, 50 year investments that they're just going to sit on.
Although a willing buyer on a house that's fully depreciated, it could be a very good move for an investor to take that property, sell it to the current tenants, move the money in a tax-deferred way into your next property, avoid the capital gains, and buy a new house that can start depreciating. So that could work truly for both the buyer and the seller.
You know, that's something else. Again, as someone who's not involved in this industry, Matt Hodges, Presidential Mortgage Group, Jim Duncan, Nest Realty, here as you're listening to listener-supported WNRN. It always seems like for many people, true or false, that there are two sides to this. There's the buyer and the seller, and somebody must win. You always seem to focus on the, did you pay more than you should have? How much can I argue the price down? It seems like a game of poker. Is there a way so that it is fair to both sides? How do you make that happen? Or is it silly to think about making it happen?
It is fair to both sides. The contract has a willing buyer, a willing seller, a listing agent, a selling agent, who have all come to a meeting of the minds on a specific price. It should make sense. If the seller doesn't feel that they're getting the value, they don't accept that contract offer. They don't put the house on the market at that period of time.
I mean, I look at it as, you know, when, and again, it's a bit idealistic, but I'd like to think that 95% of the folks I've represented have come to what you know, a win-win for both parties. I mean, a seller puts their home on the market and they want to get, you know, X, but if the buyer brings an offer that's, you know, close enough, but it allows that seller to accept that contract, close, and move on to the next phase of their lives, and the buyer's willing and able to pay, you know, whatever price they agreed upon, you know, that can be a really good, smooth transaction. I mean, I think that, you know, so it is at times adversarial in some cases, but most of these transactions in which I represent clients, they're not adversarial. They're not negative. That happens fairly rarely in my world. But I think it's, you know, if you go in saying I want to win, I want to beat the other person, you know, I mean, I'm not sure that's the right approach. You're buying a tangible product in which you're going to, you know, maybe raise your family and spend 10 or 15 years.
And keep in mind also that if you're selling, you're also literally buying at that same economic time frame. So you're getting the same advantage or disadvantage of higher or lower prices.
And what's happening in the Central Virginia area? Because there, we often talk about or hear about how it's a buyer's market or seller's market. And so to me, someone has the advantage, and so someone can't quite get the 50-50 that they would like to get. Is that true or not?
That's a great point. I think it really does depend. I mean, I've written this story many times where, you know, if a home goes on the market, you know, it's not about price necessarily. I mean, the seller wants to sell their home. And if they get the price that they want, they'll sell. And if they get the price that's close enough, they'll sell. But the end goal is for some people, is to not live in that home anymore. And so if they say, I'm not going to sell unless I get, you know, whatever that number is, then, you know, with no flexibility, you know, that might not be the best time to sell. But I think that right now we have, you know, it's still a buyer's market. The buyers are still, the buyers are still having the luxury of shopping many homes. But I think that that may be shifting a little bit. You know, you're starting to see that products are, you know, these homes are coming on the market that, you know, I've heard of homes that have for the last 18 months. It's not widespread yet. But I've heard of many, many instances where, you know, homes have come on the market and have sold with multiple offers with escalation clauses and prices being driven up above and sometimes significantly above the asking price. You know, I think it's where the market is. I mean, it's not. I try not to attribute, you know, good or bad to it. It is what it is, and we assess it and we deal with it the best we can.
11:36 here on the Wake Up Call. That's Jim Duncan from Nest Realty. Presidential Mortgage Group, Matt Hodges, is also here today.
Hi, I'm Julia Wanch, health educator for the Thomas Jefferson Health District, inviting you to kick the smoking habit. The Charlottesville Free Clinic is starting its spring series of support group sessions of Quit Smoking Charlottesville. The sessions are open to the entire community in a friendly and supportive group setting. There will be a wide range of informative speakers and no advance registration needed. The sessions are free to all community residents and happen every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. beginning February 7th through late April. All sessions happen at the Charlottesville Albemarle Health Department on Rose Hill Drive. For more information, please visit us online at SiegelFreeClinic.org. I'm Julia Wanch, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection@WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And WNRN is supported by Jefferson Theater, presenting Indecision with the Cows on Saturday, January 26th. In the mid-80s, Indecision grew out of Charlottesville, forged a unique sound from Southern rock and jazz influences, and became a frontrunner in what is known today as the jam band scene. Tickets for today, January 26th show at jeffersontheater.com. I used to go to see Indecision at the Mine Shaft, for those of you old enough to still remember that.
I think he, he nailed it. I mean, I think it, for most, you know, taking the investors out of the conversation who are looking, you know, purely at the ROI of the of that property, for the people that, again, the buyers whom I represent who are looking at this home, obviously they don't want to pay more than, you know, it's worth or what the bank thinks it's worth or something like that. But they are looking at it, you know, from an intrinsic value of will we be happy here? So, I mean, I think that that's a, you know, it, that's a big part of it. But one of the things that I try to do with my clients, whether they be buyers or sellers, is to desensitize the process. I mean, it's crucial for folks to look at it, you know, beyond, you know, loving the kitchen or the backyard. I think that, you know, it's important to look at it from a product standpoint in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously there has to be an emotional connection if you're buying a place to, you know, to raise your family or what have you. But I try to desensitize them to the fact that, yes, there is, you know, this home is seemingly, you know, great for you. If it doesn't work out, something else will come along that will fit a lot of your needs and wants. So I think it's, you know, but his point was great. I mean, it's, you know, don't get tied up in the value in a lot of ways.
How difficult is it to get a mortgage right now? Well, I mean, everybody talked about, you know, a year ago it was, you know, banks aren't going to loan anybody any money. You know, don't worry. If you need a house, you can't afford, you know, you can't afford to get the loan. Has that changed any?
Yeah, I tell you, on Friday we got the final rule from the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and it said that underwriters now have to start looking at 8 underwriting factors, documenting income, assets, employment, what the monthly payments are going to be, what the debt load is for the client, what their debt-to-income ratio is, what their credit history is. It's amazing, except we do all of this right now. The guidelines, yeah, sure, they're tougher than they were 7 years ago when the collapse started occurring. But for those people who have a solid credit history, who have a down payment or don't even have a down payment, there's zero down programs available out there, who fit a debt-to-income ratio, and what the guidelines are now is 43%. Currently today, we can go up to 45%, even 50% in some cases. 43% is not going to scare anybody. That just is a new standard that we need to work within. When I got in this business 14 years ago, the standard qualifying ratios were 28% of your gross income to your mortgage and 36% to your mortgage and all of your other debt. The manual underwrite, that is, if it doesn't fit the box perfectly for FHA, was 43. It's always been 43. This is 43. Borrowers are going to still be able to buy houses. Perhaps my job becomes a little bit more difficult because there's a lot more regulation. There's a lot more I's to dot and T's to cross, especially hard for my processors and underwriters. And maybe that weeds some people out of the industry that, you know, shouldn't really be in here because they're not professionals. But is it more difficult to get a loan for somebody who's qualified to get that loan? No.
Guys, Jim, I think you mentioned we were talking about apartments. Again, our guest, that's Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group. Jim Duncan from Nest Realty, also with us. RealCentralVA.com is his website and blog. You mentioned Stonefield. I believe we're talking about apartments. How about the rest of that area? You know, we have the new retail space. When you bring a new client into town who's meeting with you, and I'm just from my past history with you, I know that you're driving them around to places that they've seen, other areas that you feel they may be interested in. You drive past Stonefield and show them that up-and-coming area. What happens with the negative side? Do you go across the street to that, it was formerly a giant grocery store, but now it's a couple empty spaces. The grocery store is gone. The theater is gone. Do you go up to Fashion Square Mall? I mean, there are certainly some real positive, new, fancy-looking spots, and then there are other retail spaces that have some old look and empty look to them. How do you show the best and the worst of our Charlottesville Albemarle area?
Well, I mean, I wrote a story, I think last year, And it was titled something of What Stinks About Living in Charlottesville. And I try to point out to all of my clients what the positives and negatives are of our region and the Charlottesville area specifically. You know, but to Stonefield, I mean, I identify it as being a very positive place in that there are a lot of new retail shops if you're, you know, into that sort of thing. I mean, I tend to use, you know, Amazon for everything. But a lot of people like to go into stores, you know, and a lot of people have come here for years and said, you know, where's the new theater? Where's the Nordstrom's? Or why don't you have a Brooks Brothers? Or, you know, whatever these things are. So, I mean, I think that that's one way to say, you know, here's a lot of, you know, shopping and retail for those who want that sort of thing. But, it you know, but you look at across the street, and they're going to be redoing that entire shopping center, in a couple of years. So, I mean, I think that that's going to be, you know, Stonefield is going to help pull that up and make it a huge net positive. But, I mean, I always, you know, speak of the positives and negatives. I mean, it's not, you know, we like any locality, we have challenges. I mean, real quick, the Farm Fresh Market that's coming into Albemarle Square, that's opening soon into the old Circuit City place. You know, I think that's a huge positive, that they're not building something new, they're using existing space.
Right, they're filling the space.
Yeah. But, I do identify the challenges here. I mean, you using Stonefield as the prime example, I mean, the traffic patterns around that are, you know, anywhere between abominable and atrocious. So,
do you not take people there at 4:30 on a afternoon down the little space between 250 and 29?
I try not to. I just tell them that there's no traffic there and they don't need to see it. No, but I mean, I think you identify that it's a really bad place for traffic. I mean, it's extremely congested.
Do you have people ask about the politics in the area? I mean, do you have people say, oh, is this a Republican or a Democratic area? Do they come in and point out that they don't want to be taken into an area that votes Democrat because they can't have any say or, you know?
I mean, I talk about, you know, I pull the data from the State Bureau of Elections, and I look at, if they want, I'll share them the locality information and how people voted for Cree Deeds last time or how Rob Bell or what have you. I mean, people use that as a way to assess whether that's, you know, whether they think they're going to be comfortable in the area.
Oh, you also mentioned there's a new app or something that you had found?
Yeah, there's actually a couple, but the one that I'm most infatuated with right now is called Sightgeist. It's done by the Sunlight Foundation, and it's pretty awesome. I mean, you can go into an area, and it's not drilled down very, very specifically. I mean, you can't get within a quarter mile, but you can get zip code information and find out what the median price is, what the median income is, what the, you know, how people are voting and things like that. And it's I'll put it up in the show notes later with a link. But it's pretty amazing how much transparent information there is that's out there. And people are always, I mean, again, they're looking to buy not just the, you know, the bricks and sticks of the home that they're going to be living in, but they're buying into a community. And they want to feel that they're going to fit in and their jobs will be good and their kids will be good and all of this stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot more that goes into, you know, to buying or to representing a buyer from an educational standpoint, so that they do make a good decision.
Matt, you know, we're talking about this part of the real estate. Does a mortgage company, I'm sure that they do, how much does a mortgage company determine the loan based on which side of 29 you live on? Do you live on the new area close to the new Stonefield or on the side of the former Giant grocery store where it now has two large spaces that are empty?
Yeah, keep in mind that an underwriter could be located anywhere in the United States. Mine happened to be located in Richmond. They understand the Central Virginia market, but they're also underwriting all over the state and in other states. We're licensed in 48 different states. So the existence or not of new retail or big box locations that are empty is somewhat irrelevant. What we care about is what the comparable sales, again, within the last 6 to 9 months in that marketplace have sold for. And it will be influenced by things like retail and Stonefields and others, but really it drills down to what other like properties sell for.
11:48 here on the Wake Up Call with our guests, Jim Duncan and Matt Hodges. And let me take a moment and remind you that WNRN is brought to you by Visualite Cinema. It's the Valley's home for critically acclaimed cinema, including foreign and independent film. Now playing at Visualite, it's Zero Dark 30. And Silver Linings Playbook, showtimes and film descriptions for the Visualite and Dixie in Stanton and Charlottesville's Vinegar Hill Theater, can be found at visuallightcinemas.com. All right. I read this somewhere about lobbying in Richmond, which said, don't cross bankers.
This is true. I enjoy going to Richmond. I've enjoyed for years. The Association of Realtors does a day on the Hill during the crossover period, which is that day after the Senate and the House have each reviewed their bills. They're getting ready to cross over to the other side. So the Senate-approved bills go to the House side, House go to the Senate. So I've gone down there for years. Jim's gone down there. We tend to be fairly active politically. I also independently have looked at getting bills introduced at the General Assembly that would benefit consumers in our marketplace. There is an existing statute, it's called auto subordination, which allows a second lien to be put back into second lien position without getting the permission or the subordination agreement from the existing second lien holder. So this year we went down and tried to get a modification to it for just for rate mortgages. Currently, the statute says you got to improve your interest rate or else the auto subordination statute doesn't work. Well, ARMs often are much lower interest rates, but they're not a stable product. So if somebody wants to refinance, go from an ARM to a fixed rate, and the fixed rate's a higher interest rate, you can't use the statute. The bankers didn't like it. They said that's not what we agreed to. And the other thing we try to do is get subprime loans to be able to be refinanced in this as well, but there's a cap of no more than $5,000 being added to the new loan amount, and oftentimes with subprime loans, there's prepayment penalties. We want to get them out of a less stable product into a more stable. Bankers didn't like it. They said we were ahead of our time and that we should come back next year with a better proposal.
I think I found this, Jim, on your web. Go ahead.
I wanted to say something. It's from a political standpoint, it's come somewhat comical to say that once the General Assembly's in session, no one is safe. And one of the reasons that I recommend the people that I do, my clients come to me for solutions. They want the best people, and I recommend several people in various professions. But one of the reasons I use Matt and the other folks that I recommend is because they know what's happening, and everything he just said about the subprime stuff and that stuff is stuff that I, on a day-to-day basis, I don't need to know. But I need to know the right people who are aware of stuff. And whether it's in home inspections or mortgages, having the right people who are always constantly reading and evaluating the market and knowing what's happening is crucial, because this stuff in the General Assembly, it impacts us on a day-to-day basis. And I think that one plug I'll throw out is for Richmond Sunlight. For people, it's a tremendous, tremendous asset. And, I would encourage people to spend, for me, it's kind of like, the rabbit hole. But spend some time there learning who your legislators are.
You're talking about it's a website.
Yeah, it's richmondsunlight.com, where you can track what's happening in the General Assembly, see bills, see your legislators, and contact them and let them know how you think. Because if you just sit here and complain to your friends, instead of calling them repeatedly and going to see them in person, this stuff in the General Assembly is going to happen with no input from you. So I think it's really incumbent upon all of us to go to the site, learn, and get involved.
Waldo created that and then gave it away.
Yeah, it's awesome.
One of the things that I found in doing some research that has something to do with the Richmond crowd is that I believe there's a bill out there that has been titled, "Has Your House Ever Been a Meth Lab?"
yeah, that's one that I am tracking. Whether if the house has been a meth lab, whether whether that seller would have to disclose that to the next prospective buyer. I'm not sure. I'm trying to pull it up as we speak as to where it is in committee, but it's something where if a house is a meth lab, we'll that has a lot of damages to that property. I mean, there's a lot of things that really need to be known by that buyer. I mean, so it's something that I think may come about and may be law where we're having that conversation. Actually, as of 105-2013, it's awaiting a vote in the General Laws Committee. As far as I know, it's not, meth labs aren't that prevalent in our market, but I've heard of a couple. I think I showed one. a couple years ago.
Did you know that when you were going in, or did you open the door and go, oh, my goodness?
I said, oh, my goodness, and I there were some telltale signs that once I got back, realtor.org for realtors, they have a plethora of information about how to identify a house that's been a meth lab. And I know more about that now than I ever thought I would or wanted to. But that's a bill that's going to have an impact, you know, on our market. It's going to be, at very least, it's going to be a discussion that realtors are going to have with their clients, whether it be a buyer or a seller. So it's interesting things like that bill happen all the time.
11:54 here on the Wake Up Call. Just a few minutes left with our guests, Matt Hodges from Presidential Mortgage Group and Jim Duncan from Nest Realty. We'll have the podcast of this show up shortly afterwards on cvillepodcast.com. And typically, Jim puts it up on realcentralva.com a couple days with some follow-up comments. Tamara Winograd here for Les Temps Purdue at 12 noon. Gentlemen, a few quick questions. 2013 sales. You know, people always want to know, figure that we're going to talk about the past and the future. We really haven't done much about the future. Jim, as a realtor, people deciding whether or not to sell their home. I found this on there. You say buyers start homework now so you're educated and informed as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Seems pretty obvious. For sellers, you said figure out where you sit in the market context. I had no idea what that meant.
You know, I think that what I mean by that is, you know, if they know where their home may be priced and what it might sell for. I mean, it's one of the homes I pulled this morning, you know, started on the market like $1.2 million and sold for like $850 or $860. It might have sold for closer to something else if it started at a different price point. Who knows? You know, but it's a matter of, you know, sellers ascertaining where they sit in the market, know what the competition is, know what the comps are, and what they need to do, you know, in order to prepare for the market, and then make a committed decision to go for it. And don't price it based on what you hope you want or what you need to get so you can buy the next home. You know, I look at those. You know, obviously it's a huge factor in that conversation, but I look at it in a vacuum. I mean, if you're going to put your home on the market tomorrow, what price should it be, regardless of, you know, if you have a college tuition payment to write, or if you have, you know, your eye on this other home at a different higher price point, or what have you? It's just a matter of understanding where you are, because the spring market in our area typically picks up mid to late February and peaks in May, June, and then, you know, we're looking at 2014 in a lot of cases. So now's the time for buyers and sellers to really, you know, Get professional guidance right now as to what you need to do.
And Matt, how does that have we forgotten anything to say from the mortgage side of things, from the lender, from Presidential Mortgage Group?
Just in general, yeah.
Well, you know, we talk about, you know, what the buyer should do. It makes sense. Start now. You know, clean up your house, et cetera. If you're a seller, you want it to look pretty. If you're a buyer, you want to do your homework about our area and where you might want to buy, what neighborhood you want to be in. Well, what's been forgotten?
Sure. In terms of how to prepare yourself to have the best transaction possible, you know, it is to talk to a lender. There's lots of good loan officers in this town, but talk to that person and get a credit report done. Usually doesn't cost the client anything. Get a baseline. Hey, if there's things we need to fix here, if we need to get your credit card payments down, if we need to remove something that's inaccurate in your credit report, let's get that baseline done now and not as you're trying to write a contract offer. I see way too often that the offer is being made and then we're pre-qualifying them after the fact. So I'd say one of the best things that somebody can do to completely understand what they're capable of doing and what they feel comfortable doing. Keep in mind, I might be able to approve somebody for much more than they feel comfortable writing a check for each month. And we always want to drill down to, what do you feel comfortable writing a check for each month? Let's do that process as early as possible.
All right, just a few seconds left, guys. Jim, as we go out, something we've forgotten, you want to spend 20 seconds just to mention it, because you're going to talk about it on your realcentralva.com site.
Two things. One, I will be putting up show notes later today or tomorrow. And second, to echo Matt's point, our role is to know what the surprises are and identify them and try to remove them from the equation. And I think that, you know, the earlier people start, the better.
Sure. A couple things. Private mortgage insurance is tax deductible. Again, it's sunsetted this past year. Congress did extend it for 2012 and 2013. So realize when you do your taxes, mortgage insurance is still tax deductible. Second thing is FHA is going to be increasing their costs. They do not want to be the first lender of choice. They'll be the backup. Right now, if you are going in for a $200,000 loan, figure you're going to pay $16 more per month based on the changes that are coming down the road, and they're going to make private mortgage insurance annually permanent.
All right, guys, we never get to everything that we could get to. Thanks to both of you for being on the show today.
Thank you, sir.
Next week, we'll have, I want to put this in the right format, Legal Aid and Justice Center. I always want to swap the words there. Legal Aid and Justice Center here in Charlottesville, talking about what they do, but also discussing some of the topics and how it affects maybe some of the folks that fit into their socioeconomic status. Les Temps-Perdue up next. Thank you.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.